And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you to Twitter Spaces, which is incredibly scary because I feel like a someone who doesn't know what they're doing with technology at this point in time. Because even setting this up, even getting in here, it's a new experience for my 30-year-old self. I'll say that much.
Yeah, so it should be interesting. Should be fun. I can see that we have a number of people have joined the episode, so that's nice. And yeah, we'll make this obviously available in the feed. I imagine the vast majority of people will listen to this in our RSS feed. But yeah, we're excited to give this a go. And we basically threw out some mailbag, or we didn't throw out mailbag questions. We requested mailbag questions. And so we're going to try to address those. I do believe that people will be able to submit them live. I'm going to do my very best to, you know, look at these as people are submitting them while they're here in the space. And then from there, you know, we'll just kind of talk about random stuff, which we normally do. And then, yeah, we'll publish it.
Well, sounds good to me, unless you want to hear any talk about my gardening experiences or anything like that, which I'm sure people aren't clicking on this to listen to.
So you're gardening in a little bit more central Roseville, and I'm not gardening for more like westish Roseville. So
yeah, well, one day we'll get rain, but I suppose we should probably
we did get rain, man.
Stop. It's like the third driest June ever in the 130 years. But again, I'm going to take this in a whole different direction because then I just get sidetracked. But we have like 2.5 pages of gopher and non-gopher related questions to get to. So we should probably start.
Yeah, we probably should get there. All right. So off the rip, the very first question that came in that I saw, it mostly because you posted this on Gopher Illustrated as well. I thought it was a good talking point. And the question started as this. This is Alibaba. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Is that correct?
Honestly, I don't want to tell you because the running bit at this point is you can never pronounce anything correctly. So I think I'm at a point now, especially with some of these commits that I'll probably talk about tonight, where I'm just going to give you the name.
You're just going to message me the name? Okay, sure. Alibaba put out there, is everybody sleeping on Ethan or I'm crazy? And expanded a little further to say, you know, nationally, it seems people are putting out Big Ten rankings or even Big Ten West rankings, and he maybe appears lower than some might expect. You know, I found a couple of different, you know, national publications, one from actually one of your colleagues at 247. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, Brad Crawford. He posted this in April. So, you know, a lot has changed since then. Peyton Thorne no longer is at Michigan State, but we'll digress anyway. But in this one, Ethan was the 10th ranked quarterback, right? I recognize that both you and I and many people we talk to are actually quite high on Ethan. So let's try and break this down and rationalize, you know, why does it seem like people have Ethan so low in the Big Ten in terms of overall ranking? And then let's just talk more about maybe what we can expect.
Yeah, I mean, if I've learned anything from doing, whether it's kind of national media spots talking about Minnesota or just even like regional Big Ten spots, it's that everybody looks at Ethan Calliope-Manis' stats from last year and just kind of passes it off that he is going to be a below average quarterback, another one here at the University of Minnesota. They look at the 54% completion percentage, 3 touchdowns, 4 picks. It's all, there's not a lot there if you were to just look at that. But then you look at the last 6 quarters of when he actually got his feet wet, when he actually had time to prepare, when it's not Penn State in a whiteout, and the statistics would tell you a story that looks a lot brighter. But to the point I think you're making about where does Ethan fit in the Big Ten West in terms of starting quarterbacks? Well, I think he's in the bottom tier in terms of what he has proven. Because you look at what the Big Ten West looks like right now in terms of quarterback play, hello transfers and hello guys that have played a lot of football, more or less. I mean, you look at guys like Tanner Mordecai at Wisconsin, who've had a extensive career already starting. You look at somebody like Ben Bryant, who's now going to be the Northwestern starting quarterback coming over from Cincinnati. You also look at some unproven four stars like Ethan Kelly McManus is and Hudson Card at Purdue. I mean, it's something to where you look around the West, and I mean, I'm not the biggest Cade McNamara guy in the world. I'm not the biggest. I mean, Tanner Mordecai, we'll see what the experience kind of looks like with Phil Longo. But even someone like Jeff Sims at Nebraska, I mean, I understand he's played a lot of football and, you know, touchdown to interception ratios and everything. But this is a guy that at Georgia Tech played a lot of football, and he has 30 touchdowns to 23 interceptions. Yeah, he can add a lot more with his legs, which I'm sure Matt Rule's counting on. But it's something to where there's a lot of just unproven pieces in the Big Ten West, and Ethan Kelly McManus is in that tier. I mean, he's in the same tier to me as Hudson Card at Purdue, who comes from Texas, where he was a four-star recruit, and then even Luke Altmyer at Illinois, who's a former four-star recruit, because then you get into the tier of the Jeff Sims and the Cade McNamara's, you know, the Tanner Mordecai's of the world, where it's just they're experienced, but I don't know what to think. Or even like Ben Bryant, who's now going to be the Northwestern starting quarterback. My big hesitation with trying to even say that Ben Bryant, well, he will be an upgrade from the Northwestern passing attack, considering it's been just dreadful to watch the last couple of seasons. But my hesitation, if there's somehow a Northwestern fan listening to this, is Luke Fickell didn't take him at Wisconsin, and he had him as his starting quarterback last year. Now, you can tell me he wasn't in the portal. Look, the amount of tampering that goes on everywhere. If Ben Bryant wanted to be, or if Luke Fickell wanted him at Wisconsin, he would be at Wisconsin to me. Mm-hmm. So he didn't take Ben Bryant. He took three other transfer quarterbacks, and Ben Bryant wasn't one of them, and now he's in Northwestern. So that's where, to just get back to Ethan, it's just there's a lot of things that we don't know, but that's kind of what makes the West fun this year is, I mean, really there's not, you look at those, you know, the top three teams in the West, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota this year in terms of Vegas totals, mm-hmm. all three have brand new quarterbacks that'll be starting more or less, and it comes down to which of these quarterbacks do you want to trust? So that's where three unproven guys and four guys that at previous schools have at least shown some flashes.
Yeah, so I want to lean a little bit into the fact that, you know, you're right that Ethan, he did have a number of very challenging opponents. He ended up 3-2 as a starter, right? But he did have that breakout game against Wisconsin. And how much optimism are people gleaning from that, you know, 19 of 29 for 319 yards and two touchdowns and, you know, the game-winning drive to Lamecki Brockington, right? You know, how much are they seeing that relative to the larger sample size we saw? The other thing we got to keep in mind too is he was a redshirt freshman last year. There, you often see a bigger step, you know, from that redshirt freshman to sophomore season. So I can understand some of the optimism. I can also understand to your argument why a number of these guys are ranked ahead of them, just given the amount of football they've played. Now, the one caveat and the one asterisk we should put on that is they didn't play against some of these elite defenses that you're going to see in the Big Ten, you know, Big Ten West or the Big Ten in at a whole.
I mean, that's going to be the question in terms of, like, I look at this, like I talked about earlier, you know, the last six quarter sample size where he goes 26 of like 38 for two scores and looks very, very competent, looks like someone that can raise the ceiling in an offense. And that's where I feel like I've been saying this now since the end of last season, Luke, and I feel like I'm going to have to keep repeating this sure. for the next 2 months until the Nebraska game comes. This Minnesota offense is going to look a lot different in my mind than what people remember last season, where it was the Mo offense. They hated to throw. It was them in the service academies. Trust me, if you're listening to this, I'm well aware because you all told me on either on Gopher Illustrated or on Twitter or wherever it may be. But the way that Minnesota's offense is constructed and the way that they've gone out and gotten some transfer receivers and what the strengths and the weaknesses are here in 2023, well, it goes from the offensive line and the running game last year to being your strengths, where the pass catchers and the pass, and largely the passers, were unproven and they didn't put a lot of trust in them. Well, here in 2023, the running backs are more or less unproven. The offensive line is replacing three brand new starters. And you have a pass catching core of Brevin Spann Ford, Corey Crooms, Elijah Spencer, Chris Ottman Bell, Daniel Jackson, Lamecki Brockington. And oh, by the way, I will continue to say this. I think Ethan Kelly McManus is the most physically talented quarterback I've seen in a Gopher uniform in my 12 years covering this team. Now, whether that translates to more victories or what it may be, the point I'm trying to make here is they're going to throw the ball more. I have said again and again that I think that this 2023 offense throws the ball more than any other team in the PJ Fleck era at Minnesota. I'm not telling you they're going to be the Jeff Brohm aerial assault, but we're talking about a team last season that threw the ball somewhere around 21, 22 times a game on average. Well, I think this year, Ethan throws the ball probably somewhere around 27 to 28 times a game. And that's five more pass attempts, six more pass attempts. There'll be some games it's more, some games it's less. But this offense is going to ebb and flow. And that's where you finally saw in that Wisconsin game at the end of the season, they took the training wheels off the kid. And they said, we know if we're going to beat Wisconsin, it's going to be because of him. And he was up to the test that day, obviously, throwing for over 300 yards, 65% completion percentage. But that's the kind of thing I want to keep stressing, Luke, is they're going to throw the ball more with Ethan. And it's going to be – people just got to stop thinking it's going to be running into the ground, running into the ground, running into the ground.
Yeah, so this is a good segue. And on the username on Gopher Illustrated was like Anon 627441 underscore scout. Glad I got that in there. He basically, he or she was asking, can we expect to see 30 to 40 passes a game? Because, you know, PJ has often talked about needing to have a sense of balance if you want to be able to win in a given game. And I agree with you. We are going to see them throw the ball more, but I think we have to remember that even when they did throw the ball more in like 2018, maybe even 2019, they still find a way to be balanced and somewhat conservative.
Yeah, and again, you look at some of the games from last season, I think people forget at least six of their wins, they won by like 24 or more points. And so if you're winning by 24 or more points, and at what point in the world are you going to be passing the ball? You're just going to be running it. You have a positive game script. You're just trying to get this thing over.
Right.
Well, you don't have the New Mexico States and the Western Illinois and the Colorados of the world on the schedule this year.
That's a good point.
You're talking about a Nebraska team who I think – is going to be competent. I think that a bowl game is very realistic for them, or even Eastern Michigan and Louisiana, two teams that are bowl teams last season, two teams that I think certainly have a pulse. And you look at your other non-conference game and having to take on Drake May's Chapel Hill team in North Carolina over there, they're going to have to pass the ball more because you're not going to. Look, I've been wrong before and I'll be wrong again. And you all will remind me when I'm wrong again. But I just don't see a lot of games on the schedule where Minnesota is going to be up 14, 24, 28 points, and they're just going to lean on the run. Now, I'd love to be wrong. I'm sure in at least a couple of these games they will be. But when you're in closer contests, just in general, you're going to have to throw the ball more. That, and I will continue to say, I just don't feel like they have a lot of proven things in terms of in the running game. I know they have Sean Tyler from Western Michigan, saw him in the spring. But I think one of the things that people have to understand with Sean Tyler is he's not going to get a Mo Ibrahim workload. Yes. They are very, very different running backs. And Sean was very productive at Western Michigan. There was a reason he's all MAC. But he's only in his career gotten 20 or more carries three times. Whereas I think Mo averaged, like last season, 30-something carries a game.
Yeah.
So if you're still going to be running the ball 35 times a game, I think Sean Tyler gets it around 18 times a game probably. I mean, he's much more of an east-west trying to get into open space kind of a back, where Mo is a one-cut north-south guy. But there's so much ebb and flow, especially with a new play caller, with Kirk Soraka now taking $1.5 million more to Rutgers. Go to Rutgers.
Yeah.
Which he's gonna love having a 4-8 schedule for the next 3 years, but he's got $1.5 million more than he would have at Minnesota. So, we'll see what Greg Harbaugh or if it's Matt Simon, what they got cooked up. But I just think that if this offense is going to succeed, and more importantly, this team's going to succeed, the passing game is just gonna have to get off the ground. And I know that they've spent a lot of time on that.
All right, yeah, let's there's a number of questions still about Ethan. Again, a reminder that Ethan joined us in episode 287. So if you want to listen to that interview, he was actually quite good. But let's address some of these other Ethan questions, because that's a big predominant theme throughout a number of the inquiries we got. And I think some of these are kind of interesting. One is an over under from it's from Brian Wagner. I'm not sure I pronounced that correctly, but he's on Twitter. Over under. for Ethan's first full year. The line was set, Ryan, at 2,500 passing yards and 300 rushing. I'm going way over on the rushing. What do you think?
What was the rushing?
300, 2,500 passing, 300 rushing. I'd take the over on the rushing. I'd probably also take the over on the passing.
I don't know that I would take. So you're thinking that, again, these are not sack adjusted numbers. So you're thinking,
correct. I'm not going to take the sack adjusted number in that.
So you're thinking he runs for more than 20, 25 yards a game then, if you're going to play 13 games.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I think 300 is a good number. I would say 2,500. I'd lean over. I mean, I look at these stats from last year. Approximately 7 of the Big Ten quarterbacks surpassed that 2,500 passing yard threshold. If you were to have combined Tanner Morgan and Ethan Calliope-McManus passing totals, they'd be essentially right around that number. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, I think they pass more. So that's where it's going to be. Like, I know one of these questions too is, what is a realistic expectation for Ethan Calliope-McManus this year? And I have continued to beat the drum of, I think there's going to be bumps in the road with him this fall. There's going to be games where, you know, hopefully just a game where, say, you're down 14-3 at the end of the first quarter because he's learning what throws he can make and which ones he can't make. Now, he's got all the arm talent in the world, but he's still got to figure out what throws he can make against Power 5 defenses. Well, I also think there'll be games that Minnesota will be up 14-3 at the end of the first quarter because Ethan made a throw or two, and these pass catchers are just so talented. So, I mean, what do you think if I said a realistic number for Ethan would be somewhere around, again, last season he completed 54% of his passes. Somewhere around like 61%, throws for 2,700 yards and 18 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. What would you think about something like that?
Oh, I'm definitely taking that. And because I'm assuming as well that he probably runs for, you know, close to 400 yards if you take away, you know, sack adjusted rush yardage. I think that's a phenomenal start to a sophomore campaign and probably sets up high expectations for the team. I'm not necessarily saying him the next season, but at least for the team, because they're going to bring a lot back. But I really like that. And I think that's probably realistic, assuming he can play all 13 games and assuming they can make a bowl game.
Yeah. I don't know what to put for like a touchdown number on it, because I don't think this is going to be the offense of yesteryear where they got inside the 10 and they were like, okay, we have one of the greatest running backs to ever don the maroon and gold in Mo Ibrahim, and we're just going to give it to him and he's going to score 20 touchdowns in a season. I don't know that they know who their goal line back is yet. I don't know if they think it's going to be Bryce Williams, Zach Taylor, Darius Evans, maybe Sean Tyler. But like, I look at last year's stats. I mean, Graham Mertz even threw for 19 scores.
Yeah.
So if you're telling me that maybe in the red zone, Minnesota gets a little bit more pass happy with Span Ford, among others, I could see maybe more than 18 touchdowns. I think touchdowns are such a fluky kind of, more or less kind of a stat, depending upon what your offensive coordinator and head coach are like. But I feel like even me saying that, though, the 61%, 18 touchdowns to 10 interceptions, I'm telling you, from the people I talk to that I listen to, they think Ethan's sitting on like a 58% completion with even touchdowns to interceptions, maybe even worse. And I'm just thinking to myself, I must be taking crazy pills. Now, again, I realize no one really covers Gopher football. It's why you're listening to this, is I like to think I have a better pulse on this program likely than very few people in the media. But I just feel like the national perception, or even regional and Big Ten perception, on Ethan Calliope-McManus is that if he does what even I said, you know, projected him to do, I think he's going to open a lot of eyes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's possible he opens a lot of eyes. I also think, to your point, though, there are a lot of very experienced quarterbacks, so it's not unrealistic to have him, you know, towards the lower half, maybe of the Big Ten or even the Big Ten West, because there are some people with experience. But then also just the recognition of the specific schools that some of these guys are playing at. There's definitely a national bias to prop up some of those guys as well. Anything else specific to Ethan? Because I know that was a really big theme that we saw A lot of good questions. You know, the one, you know, kind of setting expectations for Ethan came from All Day TP on Gopher Illustrated. That was a really good question. All right. So one route I did want to go to is, you know, we talk a lot about the passing game so far. And Shiv 0014 from Gopher Illustrated was wondering about TJ McWilliams and Lanier and how they're looking.
Luke, you are just, no, you're not even close. And it's just, you're trying your best. It's TJ McWilliams and Kendrick Lanier.
McWilliams, McWilliams, whatever.
Yeah, names are hard. I understand that for you on West Rose.
I got TJ, side. Though.
Yeah, I'm glad you got the two letters right next to each other. We're very proud of you. So for those of you who don't know who those players are, I get it because they're brand new. Two guys that signed in December. Kendrick Lanier was here in January. You were able to see him go through spring ball. I know from talking with wide receiver coach Matt Simon and PJ Fleck, they're optimistic. I don't think there's a world that you see either Kendrick Lanier or TJ McWilliams, who just got here a few weeks ago, playing, because we just kind of talked about it earlier, but in what world are they going to see the field? Because you look at this pass catching core this year. On the outside, you've got Daniel Jackson, who I am buying all the stock in. I think that end of the season kind of set him up for this offseason. I know that they're trying to get him, and the Gopher football staff, trying to get him to kind of assume that number one wide receiver role. He was healthy throughout the spring, but he's also got help now. And that's where I don't think anyone listening to this would be a shock to hear that the slot position for Minnesota was absolutely freaking dreadful last year. And what does Minnesota do? They go out and sign one of the best slot receivers in the group of five in Corey Crooms, who was very productive at Western Michigan. They also brought in, I think, maybe a guy that probably should have had more going on in the transfer portal and maybe didn't, in Elijah Spencer, who had a gigantic spring, someone I've wrote about numerous times on Gopher Illustrated since then. I think someone that has a big season looking out ahead of him. And then you've also got Chris Ottman-Bell there, who we'll see what it looks like in fall camp here in 4 or 5 weeks, coming off he told us, Luke, when we were doing our live event, that it was a meniscus and knee. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to kind of expect realistically for Chris Ottman-Bell, but I know that when he's healthy, he's a great 50-50 ball winner. So you're just talking about on the outside, you have Elijah Spencer, Daniel Jackson, Chris Ottman-Bell, and then the hero of the Wisconsin game in Lemecky Brockington. So unless there are dire injuries, I just don't see a way that Kendrick or TJ McWilliams find their way onto the field. But I think Matt Simon put it really well this spring in terms of how they're doing. I mean, they're doing well, but the adjustment, especially at a skill position to me, like wide receiver, from high school to college, it's like opening up the fire hose and trying to have these guys drink from it. There's just so much that you have to comprehend, and it's going to take a little bit of time for them to adjust.
All right. This is an interesting question from Twitter. This is more recruiting focused, and this is something I don't even really know, Ryan. You know, as often as we'll message, I've never asked this question of you. But this comes from Milbank The. So that's a pretty good Twitter name. The is behind Milbank instead of in front of it. But the question was, how young are coaches recruiting or paying attention to players in state? Is it just varsity? Are they aware of even younger kids? Because it seems like in the basketball world, it's obviously, you know, quite young that they're starting to pay attention. And a lot of these younger basketball guys are obviously playing varsity, et cetera. Football might not be the same kind of thing. But, you know, yeah, what kind of age demographic are they really starting to pay attention to guys when they're recruiting them for football specifically?
Well, it seems like it's getting younger and younger. But here's what I would say is, you know, I talk to a lot of kids here in the state of Minnesota trying to get recruited, trying to figure out, you know, what should they be doing. And I would say this, that if you're a 2024, so you are a junior or you just got done with your junior year going into your senior year, if you don't have a school that you're committed to yet, you're running out of time, because all of these schools are filling up incredibly fast. And that's where come late July, I think the staff, because they have so many commits already, I think they have 23 commitments right now, we'll start to look forward to that 2025 class, the sophomores that are going to be going into their junior years. But it doesn't get that far forward, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like, there are names that I know about that Minnesota knows about, but you know why? Because they came to camp. Mm-hmm. That is the number one thing I would ever recommend to a kid or a recruit or to their parents or whoever it may be. You want to be recruited by XYZ school? The best way to do that in 2023 is to go to their summer camps, because that shows that you're interested in them. You go through the drills, they're able to see you, get your measurements, your time, see you move. It's one of the most important data points to get on the map. So they'll be starting to focus more and more here on the 25s. But, I mean, there's even some 26s in this state. Like Howie Johnson from Forest Lake is a guy I'm a big fan of, a defensive lineman. Or even Andrew Trout from Recorey. These kids, I'll tell you, when I was 14, 15 years old, I didn't look like these guys looked. You know, Howie Johnson throws a shot like 50 feet as a ninth grader, which is insane. Andrew Trout from Recorey is like 6'6", 260 pounds already.
That's incredible.
And I'm thinking of myself, I'm like, when I was going into my freshman year, I was like 6'3", 180 pounds. So it looks a lot different. But I also think that in the football recruiting world, you can't get necessarily too far ahead, because there's just so many things that have left to happen. Because to me, the most important data point left, or just out there in general, is senior tape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to go to camps, and yes, your junior tape's important to start the recruiting process. But from the amount of college coaches I talk to, whether it's in the Big Ten, the Missouri Valley, the Mountain West, the Northern Sun, or the MIAC, you know what the most important data point, what they all agree on? If your senior tape is good, you're going to find a way to go somewhere. So it's a little bit different in the football recruiting world.
I know you keep a lot of the stuff behind the paywall, but Lifelong Gopher, who came from Gopher Illustrated, was wondering if there are any surprises on the horizon for the 24 class, you know, any upgrades on rankings or any sleepers in general. I imagine you're going to keep that pretty close to the vest, but I'll put the question out there.
Well, I'll say this. If you're in the Twitter spaces right now, we have a 50% off deal. And every single day of my life, I wake up and I refresh Gopher Illustrated. And it's something to where there's an Ask Ryan Burns Anything thread, Luke. Do you know how many views that thread has? It's been, I think, a couple of years
since I put that up there. At least a couple million.
3.7 million views on that thread with over 21,000 questions. So if you like what you're listening to and you want to support me, it's $1 a month or 50% off to come hang out on Gopher Illustrated. But in terms of surprises, I hate surprises in recruiting, because if something surprises me, there's a source somewhere that wasn't completely truthful with me, and that's probably not a good source then. That's what I would say. So I think there's a couple of big fish still out there. I mean, you saw yesterday Wyatt Gilmore committed to Oklahoma. I get it. Wants to go play in the ACC, wants to kind of showcase himself in that conference. Totally get it. I mean, from a Minnesota perspective on it, yeah, they absolutely wanted him. I'm not going to tell you otherwise, because that's not true. But they had him on campus six mm-hmm. different times. So what else would you want Fleck to do than that instance? If you had him on campus that many times, got him on an official visit, it just didn't work out. Now we all just wait and see what Emerson Mandel, the Irondale offensive lineman, decides, mm-hmm. likely between Wisconsin and Iowa State. Those were his finalists, along with Minnesota. Sounds like a decision could be coming next week, potentially. But I'll say this, nothing with Emerson Mandel really surprises me at this point. So I think, you know, there's two other guys that we're waiting on decisions from. But if you want to know those names, you know, I've been talking about them for quite some time. They took official visits to Minnesota.
All right. So I think this is an interesting question from Golden_Gopher_. With the new Big Ten format, do you believe that Fleck and staff need to change their scheme and recruiting style a bit to compete? Which I find interesting is, you know, you're recruiting into the future. The guys that you're recruiting in this 24 class and even the 25 class, like, that is the future. They're going to play in the new Big Ten format, right? You know, no more conferences, protected rivalry games, etc. The new TV deal, USC, UCLA, etc. This is that new Big Ten format. Like, you're already recruiting them. And frankly, Ryan, I think the Gophers have had as much success ever as they ever have in recruiting. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like they're doing well. Now, they're not going to stay probably in the ranking they're at. They're probably going to drop a little bit. But still, this I still think this is probably on pace to be as competitive as they've been. So I don't know how you answer this question. I'm very curious.
What I would say is, to your last kind of point, this is the most amount of, now, like I said, I've been covering this team for 12 years in the recruiting. This is the most amount of plan A guys that I can ever remember a Gopher football coach getting, whether that was Jerry Kill, whether that was Tracy Claes, or now PJ Fleck. They have 23 legitimate plan A guys committed, and they've got a couple more out there that they would love to take. And I think it comes down to your point, I think they're sitting in the top 15 of the recruiting rankings right now. Will they stay there? Very likely no, unless a lot of their commits get four-star bumps, which we can get to a little bit later. But even a top 30 class, which I think is realistic, I think the highest that Minnesota's finished in the recruiting rankings era, more or less, is 37th, and that was that 2021 class under PJ Fleck, where Ethan Kalik-Manis was a part of that. But I don't think that they necessarily need to change the way that they recruit. Yes, UCLA and USC are going to be coming into the conference, but if anything, I think USC and UCLA have to kind of change the way that they recruit. Now, USC, probably not, because their NIL program is insane. They always recruit well regardless. But I know this is like the point I'm about to make is one of the most overplayed things here as a media member, but I cannot wait to see USC. I'm hoping that when they come to Huntington Bank Stadium in 2025, it is a late October or November game and it's cold. Because I think there is so much truth to a bunch of kids from California coming up into the cold. And if the Minnesota comes out physical in that instance, I think there's going to be something to where that's an easy 20-minute, you know, the first 20 minutes of the game, Minnesota can hopefully get – up on the scoreboard enough that when USC and their athletes do adjust, they can keep themselves in the ball game. But I don't think that they necessarily need to adjust. I think you've seen Fleck really adjust here in the last few years. I think especially defensively, mm-hmm. where you see that nickel position kind of continue to evolve, I would say, going from, you know, everybody thinks of Joe Rossi's defense as a 4-2-5, which it is. But I think that fifth, that nickel spot, that Flip Dixon type that you saw last year. I mean, I think Jack Henderson's going to come into those shoes and be everything Flip Dixon was and more. But you just need to continue to get more athletic defensively and more athletic offensively. The more athletic you are, the more things you can likely get away with. And that's where I look at this 2024 class that Fleck has committed. This is as much athletic upside, and I hate to use the word upside and potential because then everybody just dreams into the heavens. But the reality is, I would say, the amount of physical measurable in terms of length, speed, and all the things you look for in guys that if they hit their ceiling, they will be very good Big Ten players and potentially guys who play on Sundays. There's a lot of that in this 2024 class.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to the question, you know, is the conference, you know, changes and that structure going to change their recruiting? I think the thing that's probably changed recruiting strategy the most is, you know, the change in name, image, and likeness in the transfer portal, right? That mm-hmm. has probably changed recruiting strategy more than anything that the conference can do. Yeah, I did. I guess maybe you can reach out into California a little bit more, given that you're gonna have opponents, you know, in Southern California. But generally, I would think that it's unlikely to change their recruiting strategy. If anything, they probably have already identified that as the transfer portal and NIL has really morphed. How recruiting is done this day and age, right? You have a core philosophy as it goes to recruiting high school athletes, and then you have a core philosophy with transfer portal athletes as well. So that I think probably has a bigger effect ultimately. Okay. I don't know if we have any more offensive stuff that I want to get to. There's probably more. We'll talk some bigger picture stuff. Didn't want to talk some defense. And then obviously, Ryan, we're a special teams heavy podcast. So we're going to get into some special teams as well. But what I wanted to get to What I did want to get to was Jacob Schuster and his status there. This question comes from TCP 9999 on Twitter. Can you give us a little bit of detail there? The guy on Twitter or gal on Twitter said seemed like to have a potential season for him and Eastern, but it seems like he's no longer on the team if you check out the roster.
Yeah, if you look at the online roster, they made an update to it here in the last week, I think week to 10 days, and Jacob Schuster's not on it. A lot of people on Gopher Illustrated noticed that, asked me what was going on. I reached out to some sources, and I'll say the same thing I did then. Sounds like he's not going to hit the portal at this time, but I also don't think that he necessarily knows if he wants to play football. So it's something to where I don't really count on him being a part of the fall roster. I think he's got to do what's best for him. Now, in terms of him being a potential impact guy this year, I think that you look at what Minnesota's got at the one technique for this fall. Kyler Baugh returns as a starter, someone that I think Joe Rossi would tell you got a lot better from game 1 to 13. Now, the nose tackle in this Joe Rossi defense is not a sexy position. You're eating double teams, stopping the run. And they got Kyler Baugh for that position, and they also have Logan Richter from Perham, Minnesota, who got his feet wet last year. 330 pounds, gigantic run stuffer. And that's where Schuster was behind him. So I understand that, you know, there were some expectations externally. I think for myself, I wasn't really thinking that he was going to make an impact this fall, maybe after Kyler Baugh graduated. But that's the latest with Schuster.
All right. More on the defense side again. I thought this was a really good question. There's a number of people inquiring about the DBs, so I'm gonna kind of bring these together. This is from Carter Brad, a user on Twitter. The new core of DBs are going to be challenged early by Nebraska and UNC. How has Rossi handled scheme for similar situations in the past? I'm going to be sweating my ass off in the North Carolina bleachers. Am I leaving happy or sad?
Well, that's where, you look at the schedule for Minnesota this fall. They are going to be facing, after last year, there wasn't a lot of great quarterback play. They get Drake May, who's likely a top 10 pick if things go well for him this season in the upcoming NFL draft. They got J.J. McCarthy, obviously, at Michigan. They have whatever five-star Ohio State runs out there. And then we've talked about, as well, the number of just different guys in the West, like Jeff Sims at Nebraska. I mean, there really isn't a game where you can look at across and think, well, this guy's going to be terrible. Now, maybe some of these non-conference games, we'll see what Ben Bryant looks like as well at Northwestern. But to the point that the user's making, it's going to look a little bit different on the back end because you lose Jordan Howland to the New Orleans Saints. I think there's a lot of expectations internally for someone like Darius Green, who I know that Danny Collins talked up to me this spring when we got him on the record in terms of someone that is going to run around with his hair on fire, and he's not going to be afraid to hit you in the mouth. And that's one of the things. There's might be not another player on this defense that I'm not more excited to see than Darius Green, because I know that there's a lot of expectations for him. Well, how do they replace Blake Dixon, who's also at Rutgers now, and his 400 snaps? That's where Jack Henderson comes in, the Southeastern Louisiana transfer. I loved him this spring. I know my counterpart, Daniel House, did as well. And anytime that I can agree with Daniel House, who I think is one of the smartest football minds in the Twin Cities in terms of a media member, I'm going to take that chance to do so. That's where I think Jack Henderson's going to fit in well. And then it comes down to what does Elon transfer Trayvon Jones look like? Same thing with Tyler Bride from Georgia Southern. Two guys played a lot of snaps. I've asked around, how do they look running around in shirts and shorts in their first couple of weeks here? The report I heard back was promising, but I don't put a lot of stock into that, to be honest, until I can lay my own eyes on them during fall camp, because they are going to be tested even in fall camp between Lemecki, Daniel Jackson, Corey Crooms, Elijah Spencer. I think we're going to know pretty quickly into fall camp if we're going to have a guy like Terrell Smith did last fall camp, where he just burst on, stayed healthy, and turned himself into a draft pick. But there's certainly some new names for fans to get to know here this fall.
Yeah, there's a lot of names. One has local ties, being Craig McDonald, the Mini Haha Academy product. He was previously at Iowa State, then Auburn, and now here at the University of Minnesota. So out of curiosity, I saw some stuff on Twitter that second-time transfers are getting denied quite a bit of late. And I don't know how accurate that is. So I'm curious. I don't know where Craig sits. Was he a graduate transfer or not? And do you know or have any status on him or any of the other potential second transfers? I don't know how many the Gophers had coming in, but if they'll be able to play, if they'll have eligibility immediately or not.
No, the Gophers are still waiting to hear if Craig McDonald's going to be eligible or not. They submitted the waiver, I think, about a month ago now, it feels like. And now they just wait and see what the NCAA says. He's not a graduate transfer, but Minnesota did apply for a different kind of a waiver. One that I don't know that I want to get into at this time, but it's one that I think there's probably a 50-50 shot that Craig McDonald's eligible for this fall. And if he is, he'll be competing with Jack Henderson for that nickel position. If he's not, he's going to be ready to go in terms of in January when he becomes eligible.
Okay. Let's see defensively as well. There are so many questions. I've been trying to delete them as we've been going from the notes, but I'm still having a hard time keeping up. But otherwise, you know, this secondary, it's going to look a lot different. Like you said, there's going to be a number of different players. I know at one point, Ryan, we were really concerned about the secondary, and then the transfer portal seemed to bring a lot of optimism and guys that they brought in. You know, from where you were, let's say, in December to where you are now, how much better do you feel about the secondary going into next year?
I think the more pressing question is, how do I feel in terms of early April to where they are now?
Okay,
when Beanie Bishop hits the portal to go to West Virginia and Ryan Stapp just hangs up his cleats, and then you're looking at yourself thinking, I got to go to a spring practice and watch Justin and Wally, and then two true freshmen, more or less, just absorb all the reps in the world. I think for what they could get done with having, again, PJ Fleck just will not make NIL promises in the transfer portal or with high school kids. So what they were able to get in Trayvon Jones, I mean, Trayvon Jones was somebody I had been hearing about from the Gopher staff since, I think, January, more or less, in terms of a guy that liked. I think he was committed to James Madison at the time, and then they were able to flip him from James Madison. Now, again, I know there's not a lot of people going, ooh, ah, James Madison, the FCS powerhouse there on the East Coast. But if you believe it in this defensive staff's evaluations with him, and then being able to get someone like Tyler Bride, who's also played a lot of snaps, I think it becomes, how do you find someone that can be competent alongside Justin Wally? You know, I think you have a lot more bodies there. In terms of, I mean, you got Rylan Kelly and Tariq Watson, who are going to be two second-year guys that I know Nick Monroe is very interested in terms of and the amount of development that they've seen since he's arrived on campus. But then Trayvon Jones and Tyler Bride are also not brought in as depth pieces. They're brought in to compete for a starting spot. And then I'm also curious to see what Zaquan Bryan looks like, the true freshman that Minnesota signed out of Georgia last recruiting class, and there's expectations for him. So, I mean, I still feel great about safety. If you were to ask me what I think the deepest position on the defense is, I think it's safety without question.
Yeah.
Now, I also understand that I'm usually the highest guy in the room on Darius Green and the Aiden Guzmes and the Coleman Brysons of the world. I understand that Darius Green and Coleman Bryson and Aiden Guzmes really haven't played any Big Ten football, but just from talking with people that I trust inside that room and in terms of inside that defensive staff, I should say, I mean, there's a lot of optimism there, and I think Jack Henderson can help them as well. But I think September is obviously not easy because Nebraska, North Carolina, and then you've also got three competent teams there in Eastern Michigan, Louisiana, and Northwestern before you take on Michigan in early October at Huntington Bank. But I feel decent about it. I mean, I'm hopeful that Trayvon Jones and Tyler Bride can be upgrades on what Ryan Stapp and Beanie Bishop were, but I think we'll have to see what it looks like in fall camp.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of special teams, and then we'll get more away from specific units and some higher level stuff. So on the special teams, will our special teams beat
you? Why do you have to raise my blood pressure? I was doing pretty well 45 minutes into this.
This is Scott. This is from Sky U Pod 1.
Yep.
Will our special teams be improved this year? It would be nice to be above average in special teams play. I feel
like I'm the wrong person to answer this question.
I'll say we have to like break that down from like every different facet. I think kickoff, they were actually pretty decent last year, and I assume that they'll be decent again. Dragan was good.
Do you know what they were in terms of net yards per kickoff last year in the Big Ten?
Well, I know that he had so many touchbacks, right? So they took a real conservative approach. So is this in the Big Ten or nationally?
This is Big Ten.
I would guess they were probably like 10th.
They were exactly 10th.
Okay.
They were the 10th out of 14 teams in net yards per kickoff. Yeah, Dragan's got a great leg, and Minnesota led the Big Ten in touchback percentage, but that doesn't really mean it's great for the team.
No,
in my opinion.
No, I agree, but
that's a flex thing.
That's a flex decision. And I also have to, I think we also have to say, like, he either wants to be completely risk averse or just doesn't trust the athletes that they have to make the plays, or doesn't have the athletes, on special teams. So yeah, we'll go.
There's no excuses this year is what I will say to this question Like kickoff return, especially.
Yeah.
Like, because I looked up these stats because I know people just think I just yell into the wind about special teams, but there's merit to some of the things that I spend time looking into this to not be some just angry talking head for Gopher football. Prior to the Pinstripe Bowl, so those 12 regular season games, mm-hmm. Minnesota was literally, figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally at zero net yards on Quentin Redding kickoff returns. Now, I understand that changed in the Pinstripe Bowl when he had a long return, but it's not like kickoff return has been great. And that's where, to me, this fall, if Fleck is going to justify keeping what he's currently had there for the last 6 years, between Quentin Redding, Sean Tyler, who had three career kickoff returns at Western Michigan, and then Kristen Hoskins,
yeah,
who is probably the most dynamic player on this roster in terms of speed and just being able to move with the ball in his hands. If you don't return a kickoff or a touchdown, because Luke, there have been 110 kicks returned for Gopher football since the last time they scored a kickoff return touchdown. It's been since November of 2017. They've returned 110 kicks. And between Quentin Redding, Sean Tyler, and Kristen Hoskins, if that doesn't change this year, I don't know what we're doing anymore. So this is what I would tell you, Luke, just to prep you for the next 6 months of special teams talk. I'm over the whole Rob Wenger thing, and I'm to the point where now it's on PJ at this point. It's on PJ with being able to have special teams be a net positive for you at some point. I mean, they haven't blocked a punt since 2018. They haven't blocked a field goal since 2020, haven't blocked a PAT since 2017. From 50 plus yards the last 4 years on field goals, they're 2 of 8. That's not good. Like, and then don't get me started on punt return, where they, in the last 4 seasons, they have finished 11th, 12th, 12th, and 8th in punt return yards, and they don't have a punt return touchdown since Demetrius Douglas did it against Wisconsin in 2018. Like, the return game to me this year is going to be, there's no excuses, because you have bodies there that are very competent in breaking one.
Yeah.
And it's on Fleck to get Wenger in this return team to actually do something, because, like I said, you got Q Redding, Sean Tyler, and Kristen Hoskins, among others. Mm-hmm. You have the bodies to be electrifying in the return game. Now go do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I don't know, other than maybe when Antoine Winfield was returning punts, I ever have felt that they've had an electric returner in the PJ Fleck era.
Well, that's where Fleck just says, screw it. I'm never going to set up for a punt return, because he's, like we've talked about on this podcast for 20 years or the last 6 years, it's one of the most risk averse people you'll ever meet in the special teams world. And I'm sure that handicaps Rob Wenger to an extent. But that has to change this fall, because there's no way PJ Fleck can look at me in 4 weeks when I'm in Indianapolis with him at Big Ten Media Days, and he can say, you know, we just don't have the bodies at returner. You definitely do in year 7 of this program. So now you've got to, you know, get it schemed up around what Rob Wenger's got, and you got to block it right. So it's going to be, you know, hopefully the return game can provide something, and hopefully we can get more than 40 yards in a cloud of dust from Mark Crawford.
Yeah, and there was a question about the strategy on the kick returns. You know, running it back with your starting average or your starting position averaging maybe the 12-yard line or fair catch and just take it to the 25 every time. yeah, and as you mentioned, they are going to have horses that can execute and kick return, and let's hope that they actually let them try and execute. I think it's worth taking the risk and seeing the reward, because frankly, you know, you have some question marks on offense. I think you just need to have as many explosive plays and special teams as possible, even if you have some duds here and there.
Because you're not going to get, I mean, that's where you look at the special teams game. Mark Crawford is never going to flip the field for you. Peace and love. Sure. We know what Mark Crawford is at this stage of his career. So if you're not going to get game-changing plays from your punter, you have bodies at punt return to do it. You know that flex strategy on kickoff is just kick it through the, you know, through the end zone every time. Don't let you return, which is funny to me. The funniest part about Dragan Kesic and that kickoff team is I know Dragan has a leg, but I actually think Minnesota does a great job of covering kickoffs, yet we just never see them do it. So I don't really completely understand that. And then they've also got to decide. I mean, I have no idea really what to expect from Dragan Kesic as your primary place kicker this fall, because I think Matthew Trickett was actually pretty decent from 40 yards and in.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, he missed a couple kicks last season that are going to stay in the back of my memory for a long time. That should have been gimmies and maybe would have changed some games. But I think largely he was probably a net positive for that field goal unit, I should say. And then we don't really know what to expect from Dragan because we haven't seen it. So there's a lot of questions I have also on special teams.
Yeah, the other thing on kickoff return is you do have to be able to kick, you know, directionally into locations without kicking out of bounds. And I don't know that we've seen Dragan do that consistently. He can consistently put it through the back of the end zone or, you know, land it deep in the end zone. That's probably the open question. So we'll have to see where that goes. All right, so let's talk a little bit. Let's take some of these more higher level questions. And I think some of these are very interesting. So one, this is probably more of a quick hitting one. What do you think will be the most popular Gopher away game for the fans this year? I think without a doubt it's North Carolina, right?
Without question, it'll be Chapel Hill. I think the amount of people I've talked to, both on Gopher Illustrated or just casual fans, there's a lot of people excited to go to Chapel Hill. And I get it. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored in that game. I don't think particularly highly of the North Carolina defense, especially being an ACC defense. We've seen what Minnesota has done to those historically. And I'm excited to see what Drake May versus Joe Rossi looks like, mm-hmm. because North Carolina has some talented skill position players. They have arguably the most talented quarterback Minnesota's seen in years. I think that game is going to be one where North Carolina is probably favored by 5 points or so.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that just means to me that North Carolina probably wins that game 60 out of 100 times. But I think without question, everybody's excited to go to Chapel Hill in mid-September.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There actually, a question did come in just now. So I want you to just give me one name and real quick. This is from Thomas Spengler. Which true freshman, if any, could see substantial minutes this season?
I want the answer to be none, because I want zero true freshmen playing significant snaps in year seven. Of a
I want
competent
a name, though.
It's a good.
The people want a name, Ryan.
Greg Johnson, which right. There's the offensive lineman from Prior Lake, got here in January. He was the highest rated kid I think we had outside of Jackson Howard in the state of Minnesota. I love that kid. Should have been a top 24/7 recruit to me. Mm-hmm. There's his senior tape. Is some of the funnest senior tape you'll ever watch for an offensive lineman. The way he can move in space. We'll see if he can. Minnesota repped him at left guard in the spring, and left guard is wide open going into the fall. Mm-hmm. I think he's big enough and strong enough and athletic enough to potentially help you early, even though I don't know how I feel about a true freshman getting significant snaps in year seven of a Big Ten program.
All right. Real quick, rank the best stadiums in the Big Ten to visit, Ryan. I think this person is assuming you've been to all of them. I don't know that you have. Let's go with of the stadiums you've visited, Ryan, what are your favorites?
What is my criteria here? Is it just up to my own discretion?
I think it's just your discretion. So, I mean, it could be, you know, the media food. It could be, you know, the view. I think it's totally up to you. The criteria weren't set in the tweet.
I've been to a double digit. I haven't been to all of the 14 Big Ten stadiums, but I would say this. I am not a fan of Wisconsin's press box. They have good food, but that thing is rickety. And when they do jump around, it feels that thing sways. You can hear the pipes creaking. It feels like I'm just going to topple on top of the field there. I think Iowa's actually got a pretty good press box. You know, when I was there last in 2021 was when Minnesota played there. The atmosphere before that game was awesome too. I know it pains a lot of Gopher fans to hear that. But I mean, it's something to where I don't want to go to Ryan Field. For those of you who don't know what Ryan Field is, that's Northwestern Stadium. I think the last three times I've been there, it's just dreadful, man. There's no atmosphere. There's like 7,000 people there. Because Northwestern sucks. Their fans don't want to come. Like, it's such a sleepy, boring type of game. I don't know.
What about, are you going to go to the new Ryan Field? Because aren't they constructing a new one there along the water?
I think they will be. I mean, when Minnesota plays there, I mean, I've already bought my tickets to, plane tickets to head down to Chicago. I know that it's only a 6-hour drive, but I don't know. I think that's, there isn't really one that really stands out above others for me, I guess.
All right. So there's kind of a consistent theme here that I want to get into. So I'm going to kind of aggregate some questions together that came from some Twitter users and some Gopher Illustrator users. But the general premise is like, okay, Minnesota has the facilities. The student section has been good the last few years. We have an NIL program. You know, you hear often that it maybe isn't on the same par or following the same strategies that other schools' NIL programs are. But mm-hmm. basically there's no excuses, right? At this juncture, you know, from a fan base, you might say that this is kind of a hot and cold or fair weather fan base. But the reality is, you know, this Gopher football program has been about as successful as they've been, at least in my lifetime. I stand 36 years old today. And the reality is this team could end up, you know, 6-6, 7-5, 5-7. I don't think that's totally unrealistic in any of those situations. They could even be 8-4, right? We don't know. We can't predict that. But let's just say hypothetically, like, you know, how do they keep the momentum? And if they are 6-6, is this going to be looked at as a failure? Like, how do we keep fans engaged in this specific market where, you know, there isn't, it is somewhat fair weather. We do have a good group of very diehard fans and very loyal season ticket holders. But in the same respect, you know, this isn't Nebraska, right? We often make fun of Nebraska because sometimes they're so passionate that their passion rolls over into delusion, right? But you have to respect how passionate their fan base is. So how do we keep and keep the people coming with flaming hot takes that now this is a complete failure? Because for me, 6-6, 7-5 is not going to be a complete failure if I'm looking at this objectively, because it's a step along the way to sustained success. But yeah, what are your takes with that very long-winded explanation set up to a kind of question?
Yeah, I'm going to call you Dan Barrero from now on. How long that question?
I tried to meld a whole bunch of different takes.
Good golly! I guess I'll say two things. I think for those of you who have seen the last few years, like I have, the casual fan cares a lot more about Gopher football than they used to. And I think if you're going to keep that momentum going, there's a few games I look to that the casual fan is going to care about maybe more than the hardcore who cares about every game. I think that one on September 16th is going to be one that if you really want to start to grab people's attention for the rest of the season, you have to win at North Carolina. Again, I think if I were to Vegas handicap that game, I already said it. I think North Carolina probably a 5-point favorite, 6-point favorite. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm completely off on that by the time that line comes out. But I don't think – I don't look as that as a game that Minnesota is going to be favored or be an underdog for by 10 to 14 points, where I think against Michigan and I think against Ohio State there will be double-digit point underdogs. I think if you want to grab people's attention, you go into Chapel Hill and you win the game 34 to 28. And then that kind of sets you up to hopefully get it done in Evanston, get it done at home against the Louisiana team that definitely got a pulse from the Sun Belt. And that sets you up for an interesting early season matchup against the Michigan Wolverines. And I think as important as that game may be, now I'm not telling you Minnesota's going to win that game, but I think if you want to keep momentum going, you have to finally beat Iowa at Iowa. You haven't won there since 1999. Mm-hmm. I'd argue you have done everything you could ask for the last 2 years, except beat Iowa. Mm-hmm. You've played well. You just haven't found a way to win on the scoreboard. I mean, you ran for 300 yards against Phil Parker's defense last year, and you found a way to lose the game. I mean, honestly, that's impressive at some stages. But if you're able to, I think, sustain momentum in terms of going 1-1 in those games, either beat North Carolina at North Carolina or beat Iowa in Kinnick, I think you'll grab some attention. Now, to your point, I don't know that I see 5-7 in this future, but I think Vegas has the lines that I've seen are set at somewhere around 7 wins, which I think is very accurate for what this season could be. I think, to me, the floor for this season is 6-6. I just think that you have a Joe Rossi defense, and I think there's too much skill position talent on offense that I can see anything worse than a bowl game. But there's just so much unknown with this. So I think if you want to continue to grab the casual fan, win games that you're not supposed to. Now, I'm not telling – I would love to see them, you know, beat Michigan and Ohio State, obviously. But if you're able to, say, go 2-1, I would say, against Wisconsin, Iowa, and North Carolina – I mean, I think that's a good spot to be in, to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think your point about beating Iowa, you know, the trophy games do matter. I think to engage casual fans, the trophy games matter. I think that the kind of the inflection point games like North Carolina, like you said, are important. I think building into big games and executing will keep them engaged. Like, you think about the 2019 Penn State game, right? They were, Ryan, they frankly weren't very good in the non-conference of that season, right? But they kept getting better, and they kept getting better.
Yeah, 2019 was just a season that I'm always going to remember of. You could have been 0-3 against, yes, South Dakota State, Georgia Southern, and Fresno State. I mean, honest to goodness, people, you arguably probably should have been 1-2 there.
Yeah.
If you don't convert a 3rd and 30, I think it was against Georgia Southern, if Chris Altman Bell doesn't come down with a 1-footed catch in the back of the end zone against Fresno State, and then South Dakota State had you on the ropes as well, where does that season go if,
yeah, exactly,
you don't get those plays? But I think, to the point you're about to make, those games and those close games kind of set them up to then destroy and eviscerate everyone in October, and then set them up, obviously, for that Penn State win.
Yeah.
And so you win, they're going to be as tested,
yes,
in September in 2023, I think, as they were in 2019.
Yeah. Because
all of the teams – go ahead.
No, my point was going to be, like, if you – like, you win that game in 2019 against Penn State, like, I think from then on out – you've engaged the casual fan, right? You've found a way to win games maybe that you shouldn't have won early, especially in the non-conference. You started to get better and better and better. And then in the game where you're probably the underdog, but you find a way to win against, I think Penn State was ranked 4th, or I think they were top 5.
Yeah,
I can't remember. Do you know?
They were a 1-loss team, I think.
Okay. Well, regardless.
I'd have to go back and look.
Regardless, it was a game you weren't expected to win, and then you won, right? Like, that's how you keep them engaged. Now, we also have to be very realistic.
Penn State was actually 8-0 going into that game.
Were they?
I stand corrected.
Okay. Yeah. So, but the other point I want to make is that this schedule is tough. Like, and the reality is schedules in the Big Ten are going to be tough from here on out, like year, yep, after year after year. That's just not.
You got Ohio State and Michigan on the schedule again, yes, next year.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's just the new reality.
You're just gonna have to earn it, year in and year out. And frankly, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, we want to get the good schedule. Frankly, I've told you this numerous times. I love when they play the good teams. I love when they play Michigan. I recognize there have been numerous times they've gotten killed, but you kind of know where you sit against the cream of the crop, right? And then when you do win, like they won in 2019 against Penn State, it makes it all the sweeter. I love playing the good teams. You know, Iowa's got a great schedule this year, and a lot of people probably envy that, and they probably should win the West again this year. I still, frankly, would take our schedule. I like it more.
I mean, I would tell you that you're not going to get any disagreements from me in terms of, I think Iowa's the slight favorite in the West over Wisconsin. That's not a popular take, especially on Vegas, because I think Wisconsin's at 8.5 or 9 wins, and Iowa's sitting around 7.5 to 8. But I'm also not the high guy in the room on the Wisconsin Badgers. I talked about that all offseason. I don't want to get into that again. But I think, realistically, there's three teams that I would say have like an 85% chance to win the West this year. It's Minnesota, it's Wisconsin, it's Iowa. Mm-hmm. Now, I think Illinois is a team that people sleep on. And why I'm at least a little bullish on them is because they have the best front seven, I think, in the Big Ten West. And I think there's some good front sevens in the Big Ten West. But again, this is an interesting year because Vegas isn't incredibly high on them. They never have been. And the number was at 7.5. I think we screamed into the ether for the last three seasons to hit the over, and they did hit the over. I mean, this is a team that has won 9 or more games in each of the last three full seasons. Now, do I think that happens here in 2023? I don't. Is it within the realm of possibilities? It is. But there's just – we've talked about it so much on this episode. There's just so much unknown, especially a quarterback – that I don't know really what to expect, and we're really not going to know until the bullets start to fly on August 31st.
But the other thing is there's so much unknown for the other teams in the West too, right? There's so much.
Well, everybody's got a brand new quarterback, more or less.
Can nepotism find a way to 25 points, you know?
Like, oh my goodness, like, don't get me started.
But okay, I digress. Let's kind of switch and change subject.
Dirt's Free Racing 51 wants to know who I think will be the leading receiver outside of Brevin Span Ford.
Oh, Daniel Jackson.
I think Daniel Jackson's probably the right answer, but I think the fun answer is probably Elijah Spencer.
Sure.
I don't see it with Chris Altman-Bell this year, folks. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love for Chris to prove me wrong. It's just, I think Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer showed me a lot this spring. And I just want to see where Chris Altman-Bell's at to kind of pair alongside of Corey Crooms and Brevin Span Ford.
All right. This is another one I thought was interesting here. You know, some of the Big Ten neighbors of ours are complaining about competing in night games in November. I expect we'll compete for the Axe, and it will be in prime time on NBC.
So a 2:30 kick or something?
Yeah, but like that's not that unrealistic. I think the primetime NBC,
I mean, it's
one
been a 2:30 kick.
Yeah, but I think isn't the primetime NBC game always at 7, which that would make it a night game, which they haven't done before. So I think that's probably what they're going after.
Well, I would say this. If you're going to get, unless it's been changed, if you're going to get a night game in November in the Big Ten, you have to get the opposing school to agree to it. And I don't know why Wisconsin or any other team would agree to a night Big Ten November game in Minnesota.
it'll be interesting.
Unless they truly think it's just worth the national grab, I don't know why they would agree to it.
Yeah, I don't know what's in that TV contract, frankly. There was another interesting question that came in there. Oh, yeah, there's been some chatter on the boards about contingencies for poor air quality. I mean, okay.
Here's what I would say. I'm aware, like all of you, that half the time you go outside right now, it just tastes disgusting. And it tastes like, it tastes just polluted and whatnot. And I would say this, has the University of Minnesota started discussions about contingencies? They have. Do they would ever want to enact those? They don't. It would have to be as bad as it was, I think, on June 14th, if you guys remember that day, which I'm sure you do.
Oh, I remember it well.
It was like Minnesota and India were the two worst places to breathe in the entire world that day. Now, unless the air quality gets that bad, I don't see them really postponing the game. But the beautiful part would be, you know, for some of these games, especially that Nebraska game on the Thursday night, if it's that bad on Thursday, you can push it to Friday or push it to Saturday if that's going to be the case. But they have started to talk about it. But in all reality, folks, no one is going to know if they're going to put those into effect until it's like 48 hours before. So it's just going to be kind of wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah. It will be very interesting to see how that goes. All right. Any other topics you wanted to hit? I know somebody wants to know about your sweating. I don't particularly care about your sweating.
I'm currently upstairs in a bro tank for all of you, 'cause I have to got to, be at my desk in my office, and it's like 76 degrees up here. I got the ceiling fan on, and I've just accepted that I'm just going to always be sweating.
All right. I do like this one. Maybe to end.
Sure.
This is, I think it's Carger Brad, on Twitter. What's your take? Does Fluck take a more aggressive, less risk taking now that he is a quarterback and receiver is capable of leading a comeback if things go bad? So I think I'm hoping that Brad is a pretty consistent listener. We have begged for PJ to be a little bit take more risks and try to find ways to manufacture explosive plays. But I think what this question is trying to get at is, you know, are they going to be capable or willing to run a 2-minute offense either up or down, right? You know, at the end of halves or end of games. Obviously, they try at the end of games, but you know, at the end of halves, they're often somewhat conservative. And will he be a little bit more aggressive in his mindset?
I think that's going to be up to Ethan. I mean, honestly, which I don't know that that's the answer he wants, but I think that's the honest answer is we're going to find out in September what Ethan's capable of. Now, I think he's going to get much better from game 1 to game 13, but there's not going to be as many situations where Minnesota, like I said last season, I think they won 6 of their – they're 9 games by 20 plus points. Well, I mean, there's still 3 games that it was a lot closer, but to the point he's trying to make, if this isn't the year where PJ trusts his quarterback, but I think more importantly is pass catchers, because if I have to, I can't tell people the amount of Monday, Tuesday press conferences I've said in the last 2-3 years where Fleck comes in after watching the tape and he can't stand what he got from wide receiver play. He can't stand it. And he's like, it's part of the reason we're not throwing, yada, yada, yada. Well, if you can't throw the ball with Spanford, Kroom, Spencer, Jackson, Ottman Bell, Lemecki, Brockington, what are we doing? I've said this before and I'll say it again. I don't think it's top end talent wise like it was in 2019 with Bateman, Johnson, and, you know, 2 NFL guys there. But I think you have 6 pass catchers there who I think Spanford, I'm the wrong person to ask on this. I think he's going to be a top 100 pick in the next NFL draft. But we'll see what Daniel Jackson can do again. We'll see what Corey Crooms and Elijah Spencer can do against Big Ten defenses. Chris Ottman-Bell, Lemecki Brockington. If this isn't the year where Fleck looks at his pass catchers and trusts them, I don't know if that year will ever come for PJ Fleck in his tenure, wherever it may be as a head coach. But do I think he gets more aggressive in risk-taking? I do, but it's going to be on Ethan Kaliak-Manis to also take care of the ball, because – I have probably heard in my now 7 years talking to PJ Fleck, you're now going into year 7, that the ball is the program over 100 times. And if he just is careless with the ball, you're going to see Minnesota try to lean into the run more. And I don't know that that's one of their strengths this fall. We'll find out. But I would hope that the assumption of rational coaching here, which is a dangerous game to play, is that Fleck is more aggressive in risk-taking, especially in the passing game.
We're getting more questions, so I'm going to throw some more out at you here. It's not terrible.
I'll try to be quick, which is not – I know it's not my strong suit.
But
yeah, if you want to throw questions into the chat, I'll try to be brief.
Yeah, I like some of these. Will there be a GGR t-shirt a la the Pear and Spare t-shirts? I'm going to go with probably not. That probably means that I'm going to have to put some more effort into this podcast, and frankly, I don't think I'm going to do that. You guys have like kind of bits and stuff, and we have like, we talk crazy X's and O's at times. We aren't for everyone. We're just like PJ Fleck, right? We're just not for everyone.
Yeah, if you want more casual Big Ten Gopher takes, Paradise Bear is more for you, I think. We get a lot more into the weeds here on Gopher Gridiron Radio, which I think people like because there's over a million downloads now.
There's a market for it.
I don't think we'll ever be, I don't want to say ever, I don't think we'll be in the merch department soon, but I will say I'm working with the great Derek Burns on potentially some Dinky Town Athletes Gopher Illustrated merch.
Oh, that's cool.
Kevin Jacobs wants to know, casual fan here, is this a rebuilding year? Will we be okay on the offensive line, running back, in receiver rooms to produce enough? I've talked a lot about receiver. I think this is the deepest receiver room they've had in the Fleck era. I think it comes down to, at running back, what can you find not named Sean Tyler? But I would also say offensive line is very interesting to me because I think Quinn Carroll sliding into guard, I mean, we had been preaching to the choir for that to happen for the last 12 months. They finally did it in the spring. I hope it stays that way in the fall because I think he has an all Big Ten ceiling there that he can potentially achieve as soon as this fall at guard. You've got Arian Tayrisri at left tackle. I think another step forward is ahead for him. But then it becomes, what do you get at center? Because it's not going to be John Michael Schmitz. Is it going to be Nathan Bowe? Is it going to be Carter Shaw? Left guard, is it going to be the true freshman Greg Johnson? Is it going to be Tyler Cooper from just across the border there in St. Croix Falls in his fifth, sixth year getting the shot? And then at right tackle, is it J.J. Gade or Martez Lewis? I think it comes down to that. Is it going to be a rebuilding year?
I think
maybe the record reflects that, but I would also say, like, I'm telling you, I look at the schedule and there's two games that I circle as very likely losses. That's Michigan and Ohio State. The other 10 games, there's a lot to be decided yet.
It's hard to know. And like, what do you define? Like, I think a casual fan, like, I'm not trying to throw any shade at you, Kevin. I think it's a good question. I think a casual fan looks at, well, you've had 9 wins, the last 3 full seasons. Anything less than that may be a rebuilding, especially like a 6 or 7 win season. But the reality is like the strength of schedule thing plays a huge factor in this. And this is going to be a challenging schedule. If they win 7 games, I don't look at that as rebuilding, especially with how much younger this team's going to be. I know we'll talk about this later, Ryan. Like, this team it's going to be a challenging schedule in 2024 as well, but this team is built for 2024. Like, and that's where the NFL and that's where the NFL and college is different. Now the transfer portal and all that can change that drastically.
I want to see what the portal looks like.
Yeah.
I've said this here in the last couple of months, but the more I've thought about it, if they can just not get ravaged in the transfer portal, I am very excited for the 2024 season with Ethan Kaliak-Manis, his second/third year as the starter. Hopefully Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer come back.
Exactly.
You have a lot of your pieces on the offensive line returning again. I think most of your defense will come back as well outside of Tyler Newbin. Like, there's going to be a lot of pieces in place where it's tough to, in the transfer portal era, where likely 15% of your roster, if not more, kind of transfers out and moves and whatnot. But as excited as I am about the 23 season, because it's just college football and it's year 7 of a competent Big Ten program that has been pretty good here the last few years, I think that 24 season, I know that Ohio State and Michigan and USC are on the schedule. I understand that. But, I mean, that's where I'm in. I'm very excited to kind of see UCLA, not USC, on that schedule. I mean, even Minnesota going out to the Rose Bowl to take on USC.
Yeah,
UCLA. Jesus criminy, I got to get this right, man.
Are you gonna get out to Pasadena?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'll be out there. Oh yeah.
All right.
So it's all right. Any other quick ones before we head on there?
Let me refresh. I'm gonna at least try. This has been fun. I liked kind of the live questions coming in. Oh man, there we go.
Oh boy. Okay.
There's been a few. Okay. Would it be a successful season if we beat Iowa, Wisconsin, but only win 6 games? That's a good question. Would it be a successful season?
The casual fan would probably lean more towards yes. The hardcore fan would probably lean towards no. In my mind, 6 wins, I mean, unless the six wins are like, I mean, to me, that's not a successful season because ultimately you went 6-6. And for someone who was born in August of 92, I've watched 30 years of mediocre Minnesota sports for a very long time. And I hate being, I want you to either be really good or really bad. I hate the middle ground. Absolutely despise it. Can't stand it. And that's where 6-6 would put you. So I'm probably the wrong person to ask that question.
Yeah. I think at one point, I think people have said if you win the axe or the pig, you've had a successful season because that's all that fans are going to remember. I think we're probably past that point now. So I think if you win both and you're 6-6, I think people will be frustrated, but they'll be happy to have those and they'll go take pictures with them in that. But yeah, that,
all right.
That's a good question.
Mo for Heisman wants to know, I don't know if this is answered, but if you have a basement floor ceiling for eighth, and what would it be? I guess for 23?
Let's go with 23 for now.
I mean, if you said what's the ceiling for Ethan, I mean, if you want to get crazy, I mean, to me, it's crazy. Like, 66% completion percentage, 3,000 passing yards, yes. 25 touchdowns, 12 picks. I mean, I think he's going to throw double-digit picks.
Yeah.
To me, I think just the way he plays quarterback, he likes to take risks because he's got the arm talent to do so. What do I think is realistic? I talked about it earlier. 61% completion, 18 touchdowns, 10 picks. The floor, 58% completion, 14 touchdowns, 14 picks.
Maybe he gets
like
benched
that
for Cole Kramer. I mean,
that'd be the basement. But I mean, I can't see a world in which PJ rolls out Ethan for 12 games if he's just not taking care of the ball. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, and I think at the basement too, like I think those numbers are maybe even a little bit high because knowing PJ and his identity, he'll find a way to run the ball. It'll be the Zach Evans, Darius Taylor, show. We're just going to pound the ball and be risk averse. So,
all right. Is that about it?
I think that's about it. I know somebody asked, are we going to put this on YouTube? Probably not, man. Sorry. It's hard enough to get Ryan to do a Twitter space. But I mean
if you want me to do more Twitter spaces, peace and love, let's find a sponsor for this thing, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean
I can come on here and talk all day about whatever random stuff, Gopher football or not Gopher football related, you guys want.
Yeah.
It's just time is the older I get, Luke, time is not as plentiful as it used to be.
Yeah, tell me about it. I got two kids. Okay, yeah. Want to thank everyone for listening. Tons of questions. Sorry that we didn't get to all of them, especially here for those late. This was fun. It was fun to try. I think it worked pretty well. We'd appreciate your feedback, obviously, on Gopher Illustrated, on Twitter, etc. This will be in your feed, so if you join really late and you only caught part of it, the whole thing will be available. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're basically on most podcasting platforms. If this is your first time listening, welcome. There's been over a million downloads and listens. So it's really cool to see how much this podcast has sustained a listener base. And we have a number of sponsors that are going to make this possible here in 2023. We're going to do everything we can to twist Derek Burns' arm to join us once again. I think we'll be successful. But you never know. He can be hard to pin down sometimes. And so we might have to get him on contract or something like that to say that he'll join us each time. But we're hopeful to get his elite analysis back as well. We will have preview episodes for the season like we always do. We will draft for Big Ten honors with Daniel House at some point. Anything else, Ryan, that we're missing?
I mean, we're 2 months away from Nebraska. I'm just excited that the offseason's finally over. Everybody knows who's going to be on the roster because nobody's in the portal anymore. Recruiting has been hot and heavy. I know the coaches are excited to be on vacation right now for the first time since January. But I'm excited to talk about an actual Gopher football team. Mm-hmm. Where I think the ceiling and the floor is going to have as much variance as we've seen in a recent Gopher team. Mm-hmm. But that's because of the potential of what this offense could be with Ethan. And that's where I'm just excited to cover a quarterback that has a ceiling unlike, you know, we've seen here in a while. Now, like I've said, there's going to be bumps in the road here. I'll be the first one to tell you that here in 23. But I also think there's going to be some games, man, where Ethan's going to make some plays and people are going to be like, this is fun. So it's going to be a fun year. I hope people want to hang out with us.
All right. So if you're listening to this while you're driving, stay safe, especially if you're on a lawn tractor or mower, and enjoy your 4th of July. Again, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining to the numerous people that joined. And man, some of you stayed the entire time. Kudos to you. We'll give you a digital high five. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.